It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The question of whether Pittsburgh police officers should be required to live in the city goes before arbitrators in September. For his part, City Councilman Ricky Burgess supports the idea and would like to see it put on the November ballot. If the measure is passed and voters approve the ballot question, the residency requirement would become part of Pittsburgh's Home Rule Charter. That requirement is part of the city code, but it still might not matter because the state legislature last year passed an amendment ending that stipulation. The Fraternal Order of Police then challenged the residency requirement, and the dispute has gone to arbitration. Should Pittsburgh police officers have to live in the city? We'd like to hear from you. Call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Once again, should Pittsburgh police officers have to live in the city? Call us at 412-246-2002 to weigh in. I'm joined now by phone by Chris Potter, editor of the Pittsburgh City Paper and author of a recently published editorial in that publication called Hitting Home: Police Seek to Distance Themselves from the Community They Protect. Chris Potter, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
In your piece, Chris, you described a powerful scene in which a Pittsburgh police commander named Rashal Brackney showed up on the scene of a sit-down protest in the Hill District earlier this month, in which demonstrators were voicing outrage at George Zimmerman's acquittal in the fatal shooting of Trayvon Martin. Take us through what happened.
Well, the protesters had sort of made a spontaneous decision, about a dozen of them, to sit in the middle of Center Avenue on a Sunday evening 2 weeks ago. And as you might expect, after they stayed there for a little while, a contingent of Pittsburgh police showed up. And the commander who happened to be on call that evening was Commander Brackney. And she approached the protesters and basically sort of knelt down with them and started just sort of speaking with them. It was sort of a fascinating conversation to be a part of. And it quickly developed that several of the folks sitting down and some of the people who knew them knew Commander Brackney from church groups, from hip-hop aerobics class, from a variety of ways. And it was pretty clear that although the commander took a lot of steps to diffuse the tension of the situation, it was obvious that just the fact that she kind of knew these folks and that they knew her also kind of helped diffuse some of what otherwise would have been a potentially even tenser scene. And so what she essentially decided to do was to allow them to stay there, at least until the morning rush hour, if it had come to that, and just sort of reroute traffic around them. And after a few hours, a little after 11 o'clock that night, the protesters left of their own accord. And, you know, as you said, this was a protest called to object to the justice system's handling of the Zimmerman case. And, you know, there was a potential for that situation to create an even larger sense of grievance. And instead it got diffused very nicely by the commander.
What did this particular incident or non-incident indicate to you with regard to the issue of police living in the community they serve?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me it sort of brought home, you know, when we talk about these issues, and I think if you look at the media coverage so far, so much of the conversation has been about what the police want, you know, and they have their own reasons for, you know, wanting to leave the community. And it's not just a Pittsburgh thing, and it's not a new thing. These debates have been taking places in cities across the Commonwealth for many years. And we talk about it typically in terms of what that all means for the police. You know, do we recruit the people we want? Do they leave to go to some other suburban community? And I think it's important that we kind of see the potential upside for the community and what stake the community has in these questions. Because very often when these things are hashed out in arbitration and in contract talks, it's really just about, you know, the employer and the employee and kind of the deal they've set. And there is this sort of broader public stake in the discussion, and I thought that was really in evidence that night.
412-246-2002, the number to call. Let's go to the phones. We have John in Pittsburgh who'd like to join the conversation. John, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, the police need to be living in Pittsburgh because they need to know the community. And the other reason is they need to want to do something for the community. I've heard so many people, the people living in the suburbs, they say, you know, to hell with that. That place is, you know, we only go there if we have to. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have that attitude, how are you going to serve in the interest of the community? And if you are a police guy, of course it's an employment, but you also should have the interest of the community at heart.
What about, let me ask you this, John, and Chris, feel free to chime in, but what about the fraternal order of police argument that lifting the requirement will make it easier to recruit and retain quality officers?
I absolutely think that is a fallacious argument. You know, there are millions here, and I don't know millions, but you know, and the guy ran off there only because he thinks, oh, you know, that place, we only go there if we have to. That I've heard that time and again.
Well, let's let Chris chime in. And how does what John is illustrating here contrast with in particular, the incident, or I should, again, not say non-incident, that you experienced earlier this month?
You know, I mean, I think the flip side of this argument is a lot of the times the tension between police and the communities is heaviest in communities where police don't live anyway. I mean, there's a residency requirement that applies for the city, but I think while I don't have, and I don't know that anybody else has seen a real study of where police live, anecdotally, it's pretty safe to say that police live in some neighborhoods more than others, and the neighborhoods they choose not to live in tend to be neighborhoods that require the heaviest police presence. So that's sort of the one thing that kind of weighs against the value of a residency requirement. The place where the tensions are worse in a community like Homewood, police aren't living there now anyway. And I think what I said before, that the community has a stake in this. You know, to me, I don't know that the top priority the city should have is that police live in the city. There might be things that are worth more. Maybe there are concessions on police training or police disciplinary procedures that might be of more value in terms of shoring up community police relations. The problem is that all that stuff has to happen in a collective bargaining, in contract negotiations. And what the police department is doing right now, the FOP is doing right now, is seeking to have all that stuff waived in arbitration. So essentially, they're kind of looking for the get out of Pittsburgh free card in all of this, so they don't have to give up anything in return. And I think that's where I really have a problem with what's going on here. I could see using residency as a bargaining chip as long as you got something in return for it that would kind of make up for the breach in trust that John is talking about. You know, if they just don't feel that they have a stake here, then there's obviously a loss of trust. And I think something should be offered in exchange of that as a sort of way of pledging to the city of Pittsburgh, you know, we haven't forgotten you. We're not leaving you behind. We're committed to providing great service for you.
As you point out in your piece, the city's likely next mayor, Bill Peduto, seems willing to do what you were just suggesting, to waive the residency requirement in exchange for concessions on other issues like policies governing promotions and discipline. Is that a trade-off that is acceptable, though, to people like John, for example, who just called in and said, no, absolutely, police officers should live in the city of Pittsburgh?
Yeah, and my guess is the answer to that is no. It's a visceral issue, you know? I mean, I think the thing is that nobody's asking the police to do anything that 300,000 other residents of the city of Pittsburgh aren't already doing, which is, you know, live in the city of Pittsburgh. So it's a little hard to make that case if you're a police, you know, if you're the FOP and say, yeah, you should pay us your taxpayer dollars to support our salaries and benefits, but you shouldn't ask us to live here in return. And I think there's just a very basic level, on just a very basic kind of visceral level, you know, people don't want to hear that argument. And you know, I can understand why. I'm just saying that, you know, if I'm the manager of a city, if I'm the mayor of Pittsburgh, I look at this and I say, what do I need to do, you know, to diffuse what is have become some very ugly tensions in certain parts of the city between police and residents. And, you know, how do I kind of balance that need with the tools that I have at my disposal? So I think, you know, a caller like John, and I respect that opinion and understand it, you know, they're basically going to say, you should live here. If you're taking my tax dollars, you should live here. And I think, you know, what Bill Peduto would try to negotiate, I don't think really speaks to that concern.
It'll be interesting to see, assuming that he is the next mayor of the city of Pittsburgh, how he handles that. We're talking with Pittsburgh City Paper editor Chris Potter here on this edition of Essential Pittsburgh, discussing the issue of whether police should be required to live in the city of Pittsburgh. 412-246-2002 is the number to call if you want to get in on the conversation. We have Sam in Shadyside. Sam, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, guys. I wanted to tangent off of what Chris Potter had said, a remark you made, Chris Potter, about, you know, where there's a lot of conflict between police and the public are usually or probably not places that they live. And what that made me think of is, I can tell you where police officers don't live. They don't live in Squirrel Hill or Shadyside. Those are two that I can think of. And the reason is they can't afford the housing. And, you know, as much as I like the idea of police officers that police the community should be a part of the community and live in the community, I really do think that's an attractive idea. I think it really seriously limits, in some ways, what kind of house, what kind of home police officer can live, how, you know, whether he can live. You know, I have a friend who's an employee of the city of Pittsburgh. He's not an officer, but he is under the same rule that he has to live in Pittsburgh. He lives in the north side because that's what he can afford for. He's starting out with a family, and he hates the north side. And there are a lot of options that he could avail himself to, but he can't because he's got to be a city resident. And so I just think that's a real infringement on somebody's, you know, freedom.
All right. Well, Sam, we appreciate the call. Chris, any response to that?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the, you know, the argument of the officers who'd like to get out from under this thing is you know, it is an argument of freedom, and we ought to have a right to live anywhere we want, no matter who pays our salary. I will say that, you know, I think it is true that police, who are not, you know, hideously well paid by, you know, the standards of a CEO or whatever, there are certainly neighborhoods they are priced out of. You know, the flip side of that is there are a lot of sort of middle class and working class neighborhoods in Pittsburgh. You know, I've spoken to residents of those folks who they do have a lot of police officers in their community, and those folks feel like, you know, if all the cops moved out, A, there's a bunch of vacant property all of a sudden going up for sale on my block, and B, you know, people really do like having an officer living nearby them. They feel it gives a, you know, it makes their community safer. And, you know, that the police officers will stay and do, you know, youth football leagues or whatever else they do just as members of the community contributing to it. So, again, I certainly understand the desire of police officers to live wherever they want. But there are definitely communities out there who feel, you know, entitled because they're paying these salaries. And, you know, we give officers a lot of power and a lot of authority. And I don't think it's too surprising that people ask for something in return.
We have a tweet from David who says, is there a possible compromise by offering a bonus to reward police residents? So it sounds like where he's going with that is that if an officer is not required to live in Pittsburgh, a Pittsburgh police officer is not required to live in the city, but does so anyway, that they would be offered some sort of bonus or reward for doing so.
I hadn't thought about that. That's an interesting question. I mean, I assume that provision, that would come up for a matter of collective bargaining as well. That would be something that the city and the FOP would kind of have to negotiate. I know that Bill Peduto's rival in the May primary, Jack Wagner, had talked about, again, somebody who also didn't oppose letting the residency requirement go by the boards and was, in fact, endorsed by the FOP. He had talked about, you know, I think the way to approach this is to do some kind of voluntary incentive, you know, that gives people some incentive for sticking around in the city of Pittsburgh. So those ideas are certainly something that people have talked about. I don't know what the legal ramifications of something like that would be.
Let's go to George in Cranberry. George, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hello, George. And apparently we do not have George on the line with us. So, Chris, Pittsburgh City Councilman Ricky Burgess says that voters should have a say in the matter. It should be put on the November ballot. Do you see that happening?
You know, I think it's very likely that it does end up on the ballot. Council voted unanimously in favor of that. I think the real question here, though, is whether that makes any difference. It's not at all clear. What putting that on the ballot and having it pass a referendum would do would essentially enshrine the residency requirement in the city's home rule charter. As I think you said early on, it's already in the city code, but the home rule charter is kind of the constitution for the city. The problem is this, is that in other municipalities, the residency requirement has been enshrined in their home rule charters, but an arbitrator's decision basically voided it anyway. Wilkes-Barre was a good example of that, and Philadelphia more recently. Both had home rule charter provisions that said police officers have to live in the city, and in both cases, an arbitration panel said, well, no, you don't. And that was basically the end of it. Judges have found that the provisions of arbitration are binding and that they trump anything that, you know, you or I might have to say about it at the polls or anything that happens to be written in the city charter. So it's at least a very strong symbolic message. I don't know, legally speaking, how it would necessarily change the landscape or if it would at all.
Chris Potter is the editor of the Pittsburgh City Paper, joining us by phone. Chris, great thanks. We appreciate it.
No problem. Always good to be with you.
Coming up, we'll learn how a summer camp is helping children with asthma, and we'll remember Pirates great Willie Stargell. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.